Chapter 36. Tempest Raging. Deep 7 hummed with frantic activity, tensions rising as each hour passed, and more dreams and visions of destruction and mayhem poured in from the Oculum. The map was a mass of flashing red pinpricks by the time the Archive dismissed Hilo so they could start coordinating with the Medius to get operatives to the hotspots. Hilo rejoined Magdalene, Cassandra, Corinth, and Dolorum in the common area. Cassandra and Corinth were working through clipboard loads of forms. Well, Corinth was. Cassandra had constructed a veritable air force of paper planes with her stack of paper, throwing them around the common room as she finished them. Dolorum ignored his, watching TV, his hands folded in his lap. Hilo spied his own column of forms nearby. The Ash Angel organization really needed to go electronic before they deforested the planet. Hilo brought them together and filled them in on what he had learned. Magdalene congratulated him on steering the Archai in the right direction, though Hilo gave Tella the credit. "What are they going to do with us?" Corinth wondered aloud. "They can't put us out to pasture right now." Dolorum shrugged. "I guess I should have told them I'd be happy to help. I think the AAO is misguided, but this isn't a time for philosophical arguments." Hilo sat and pulled the hefty clipboard onto his lap to launch into the tedium the others had already started. He had barely managed a fourth of the stack when the elevator opened, and Grand Arcus Gideon strode out, flanked by Arcus Ramus and Arcus Mars. Hilo's brow furrowed. That didn't look good. The three men regarded the group gravely. The others put their forms down and prepared to stand, but Arcus Gideon waved them back down. Arcus Ramus looked at Cassandra's paper airplane display and frowned. Gideon held a tablet in his hands and looked at Hilo as if to size him up, his noble features set like a man preparing for battle. "I have your assignments," he announced. "We'll need to get you into envelopes and out of here immediately. As you may know, we've received a number of disturbing visions and dreams that indicate the Dreads are going to perpetrate a massive attack, and not against Ash Angels. Early analysis shows they are planning atrocities at schools, hospitals, sporting events, and anywhere else there are a lot of people. Thanks to Hilo, we've surmised that they are spreading our operatives thin to make way for the East Wind to dock unmolested." He paused, and his gaze lingered on Cassandra for a moment. "While we were planning a way to take the East Wind, we received the following video message through Goldbow's phone. It was recorded an hour ago." He tapped the tablet and turned it toward them, Goldbow's familiar face filling the screen. Dreads had tied his arms behind his back, and he sat in a rusted folding chair, shirtless, wearing an oil-smudged pair of oversized jeans. A single bulb hung from the ceiling in a nondescript white room. Hilo shook his head. Even after what Goldbow had done, it was hard to see him like this. The room didn't give enough detail to provide a clue as to his whereabouts. "Read it," an unfamiliar voice dripping with malice prompted from behind the camera. Goldbow appeared a little confused, eyes blinking erratically. The Dreads had torched him. If anyone had an ocean of guilt to drown in, it was Goldbow. The former SEAL struggled to focus on something behind the camera. "In 36 hours, we will launch assaults across the country unless the following conditions are met. First, all Ash Angels in the greater Chicago area must be redeployed elsewhere immediately. Second, the Ash Angel known as Hilo must arrive alone at the coordinates indicated on the screen within the next 24 hours. No phone, no tracking devices. If either of these conditions is not met, the attacks will roll forward as planned, resulting in massive loss of life. That is all. This will be the last message you receive." The video wobbled, and then, camera running, an unseen hand hurled the phone at the wall, picture dissolving on impact. Gideon punched up the tablet again, showing them a map of Chicago and Lake Michigan. "These are the coordinates," he said, a red dot floating out in the middle of the vast lake, miles away from shore. "You're not actually sending him out there," Dolorum exclaimed. "They've got no choice, Dolorum," Hilo said, seeing the predicament. Yes, it's probably a trick, and they will probably go through with their attacks anyway. But if there's even a chance that my going out there can stall it, we have to take it. The Grand Archist nodded his head. I hoped you would understand. This is the second time we're going to send you into the wolf's den, Hilo. Divine Providence saved you last time. We hope that happens again. Cassandra stood, clipboard and forms spilling from her lap to the floor.
Dolorum was the Divine Providence last time. There's nobody out in the middle of that lake who can help him. This is just dread BS. It doesn't matter if you send Hilo, Ronald McDonald, or a circus monkey out there, they will attack. Devin Quinn wants Hilo so he can get revenge for Primus.
Be that as it may, Arcus Ramus said. Hilo has come to the same conclusion we have. We must risk his life so we can have as much time as possible to get our people in place to protect the normals.
Do you at least believe what he's been telling you now? Cassandra asked, taking her seat. Or are you going to keep treating him like some sort of dread collaborator like everyone thought I was?
We've always believed Hilo, Ramus said.
Oh, please, Ramus, Cassandra retorted.
Listen, Ramus urged her. We believe what Hilo said. We just don't believe everything the Dreads have told him or tried to make him believe. There's a difference, and it's our job to sort it out. We'll do everything to protect him. Mars stepped forward.
We've got Michael teams in nearby cities ready to fly to the East Wind to pull him and Goldbow out if we can.
Cassandra shook her head. That'll just get a bunch of Michaels killed along with Hilo.
It's okay, Cassandra, Hilo said. I'll do this. It has to be done.
If Cain wanted revenge, then so be it. It might be a chance to burn the old bastard.
She rolled her eyes and sat back down, zoning out.
Can you handle a boat by yourself? Ramus asked.
Yes, sir.
Good. These are the rest of the assignments. Magdalene, I need you to be the courier to get everyone out. We'll have you meet up with other couriers and pass most of the envelopes on. I want you to coordinate the evacuations of Ash Angels out of Chicago after getting Hilo's envelope situated on the boat. Dolorum, we could really use you right now. You were a team leader once. Will you help us?
He nodded.
Just don't make me hold a gun. Thank you. You will assist Magdalene with the evac in Chicago. Corinth, we are sending you back to the southwest. Await our instructions on the other side of the next dawn. Cassandra, I need you to meet with Dr. Esther here at Deep Seven for a psychological evaluation.
I am not going to Dr. Esther, Ramus, she stated forcefully.
You will not leave Deep Seven until you pass an evaluation, Ramus countered unflinchingly. That is all.
You can't keep me here.
Arcus Ramus looked her in the eye.
Yes, I can. I have trusted and supported you, Cassandra, so don't look at me like I'm some kind of Judas. All of us here know what happened to you, and I will not let you back into the world until you are healed enough not to hurt yourself or others. You can curse and rage all you want, but I will do what's best for you whether you like it or not.
Cassandra's eyes boiled with tears, but she said nothing as Ramus strode off. Grand Archis Gideon regarded her with pity, and then turned his gaze to the rest of them.
I need the rest of you to go to the extraction rooms now. You'll have plenty of company today, but we need this done quickly. The schedule is tight, and some of you have a long way to go. Magdalene, we'll pop you out of here and onto that yacht inside of an hour, so prepare. You'll have a full satchel. Thank you, everyone. May God bless you all.
Deep Seven had four extraction rooms, and Hilo queued up in a line 10 deep to wait his turn to have his heart cut out, burned, and placed in a special envelope for Magdalene to carry to the outside. Corinth and Dolorum waited behind him.
You think Cassandra still loves Goldbow? Corinth asked while they waited.
I don't know, Hilo answered.
I don't think she could hate him so much if she didn't, Dolorum said.
Corinth frowned.
That doesn't make any sense.
Dolorum shrugged.
Sense has nothing to do with it, kiddo.
Maybe I'll have a shot at her now,
Corinth speculated, rubbing his short mohawk as if primping it for a date. Dolorum and Hilo looked at each other and said nothing.
You guys don't think so? Come on, I've always been smooth with the ladies. What's not to like? I got the guns and the buns, right?
A technician stepped out. Next. Hilo darted in, leaving Dolorum to field the awkward question. When they returned to the common room, Hilo found his forms right where he'd left them. He noticed that Cassandra, who was missing, had dismantled her airplanes, taking the folded papers and using Hilo's monstrous stack as a paperweight to try to crush them back into flatness. She returned 2 hours later, countenance more peaceful than he had seen it since their encounter in the Morse home. She sat down and retrieved her undone Air Force from the table where Hilo left it.
You visit the shrink? Hilo asked.
No, Hilo. I visited a mental and emotional well-being professional, she said, applying pen to paper after balancing the clipboard on her crossed legs.
Looks like it helped.
No. You know how many shrinks I've been to. I know all their develop a trusting relationship and build a foundation for healing and cognitive behavioral strategy crap. I've developed an immunity to psychotherapy. But I also know all the right things to say to get them to see I've overcome my problems and am ready to face the world again.
Hilo threw her a disapproving look.
Don't look at me with that tone of face. Run along and do your forms, little Hilo, she said with a mocking tone that came off as a little too carefree. You've got a date with an entire lake to prepare for.
Just after midnight, Hilo signed the last form and dropped his stack on the table he imagined would collapse under the weight of their combined paperwork. As usual, he came in last in the form fill race, everyone else chatting among themselves or watching the news broadcasts Deep Seven piped in to help them pass time. Cassandra spent a lot of time reading, a self-satisfied smirk on her face.
So did the doctor approve you for duty? Hilo asked. Is that the reason for your sudden sunshiny mood?
Cassandra looked up from her phone.
If you think Ramis is going to let me out of this hole any sooner than 2 weeks from now, you're stupider than I thought. Look, I'm a woman, Hilo. My moods shift like the unpredictable water of mysterious Lake Michigan.
They do not, Hilo said. You're up to something.
She shrugged and went back to reading. Her odd mood plagued him as the time ticked by, and he couldn't shake the feeling she had manipulated someone into something. Magdalene was long gone with their ashes, and he seriously doubted Corinth and Dolorum would be able to pry anything out of her. About an hour before dawn, Ramus joined them to review their updated assignments. Hilo would wake on a small yacht owned by the Ash Angels and proceed to the coordinates specified by Goldbow. Magdalene would leave her heart in a secure location, get the boat out away from shore as far as possible, and Hart traveled back at dawn to meet with Dolorum. Ramus left, and they passed the last hour nervously. Hilo said his goodbyes to Dolorum, who urged him again to leave the AAO and join him at the Redemption Motorcycle Club when it was all over. Cassandra sat reading with the irritating little grin on her face that seemed to widen as the hour of dawn approached. Hilo walked over to her to say goodbye, not sure what to expect. She spoke before he could, staring at her phone.
Hilo, did you know Lake Michigan is the fifth largest lake in the world?
No.
Look, Cassandra, I'm fascinating, isn't it? Let's see, it's 22,400 square miles. That is a lot of water for a careless ash angel like yourself to get himself killed in, don't you think?
Well, I don't plan on dying, Cassandra.
Well, you really should, Hilo, she said with mock concern. I mean, it's sort of inevitable where you're going. What else? Let's see. Its average depth is 279 feet. Not that impressive, but still enough to drown in.
Anything else, Professor?
The weather for today is a chilly 45 degrees with an 80% chance of scattered showers. We Ash Angels don't mind the cold. Hope they remember the umbrellas, though. The damp really flattens my hair.
Hilo's eyes narrowed.
I think your hairdo is safe in Deep Seven.
She responded by unzipping her jumper to just below her sternum, showing a healthy chunk of cleavage.
Hilo noticed the stitched-up extraction cut puckered along her upper abdomen below her bra.
"Like what you see here, Hilo," she said in a teasing, sexy voice.
She zipped the jumper back up. "There's no way," he exclaimed.
"Oh, there were so many people lined up for extraction today. Those poor techs can't keep an eye on everyone, you know. And Maggie was so willing to let me put a personal note to my beloved trainee Hilo in his envelope before she shipped out."
Hilo glanced at his watch. 20 seconds to dawn. He glanced around the room. A comm panel was embedded in the wall by the elevator. Did he have time to alert Ramus? She put her phone on the table and stood.
"Silly jarhead, it's too late. Our ashes are waiting on a yacht bobbing on the choppy waters of Lake Michigan. Relax. You're about to get what you always wanted."
"What?"
"To see me naked."
Rapture. Hilo came to, finding his arm draped over the soft flesh of Cassandra's hip, his face buried in her golden hair. Magdalene had placed the ash-filled courier envelope on a narrow bed in the stateroom. It was cozy. The boat undulated in the choppy water, rolling her into him.
"Thank you for a wonderful night, Hilo," she said, faking a sleepy tone. "Why don't you make some breakfast? I like my eggs scrambled."
He shoved her off the bed. "You impossible woman." She stood and faced him, putting her hands on her hips and throwing her elbows back, hair falling over her soft shoulders.
"What's wrong, dear? You afraid I'll tell your little honey Telemirin you couldn't resist a hotter woman?"
She leaned forward.
"Don't worry. This will be our little secret."
"Knock it off," he growled, scanning the room. A duffel bag full of clothing and equipment waited on a table at the foot of his bed, while Magdalene's now abandoned clothes lay on the floor in a heap next to the stairs that led above deck. Another bed waited across the narrow room, stained oak accenting the drawers beneath the beds and the armoire at the far end opposite the stairs. Weak light from a porthole in the wall revealed an irritated lake churning in the murky dawn. Tube lights stretching down both sides of the stateroom dispelled the gloom, revealing Cassandra's form in all its majesty as she strutted to the armoire and pulled it open.
"Fantastic," she said sarcastically. "All men's stuff. At least there are boxers, though I think I could rock a pair of tighty-whities. I guess I'll have to wear Maggie's stuff."
Hilo reached over to the duffel and pulled it onto the bed, finding a comfortable pair of jeans, a polo shirt, and a heavy jacket. A BBG and 3 boxes of ammo waited under a pair of socks and sturdy cross-trainers. He doubted the gun would do him any good. They dressed in silence. Maggie's ill-fitting clothing emphasized nothing on Cassandra's body and the proper way. She cinched a brown braided belt she found in the armoire to keep the brown canvas pants from succumbing to gravity and had to fold up the pant legs to compensate for her shorter legs. The white cotton sweater was too long and too tight in all the wrong places. Or right places, if he was being honest. She morphed her body, and the clothes settled more comfortably into place.
"Not exactly haute couture," she said, spinning as if at a fashion show.
"Enough screwing around," Hilo said. She was really on one. "Why are you here, Cassandra? You know this is probably a one-way ticket."
"You said you weren't planning on dying today," she reminded him. "Or are you just saying that to make me feel better?"
He made his way out of the small stateroom and up the stairs toward the cockpit. "I'm not planning on it, but I probably will. This is about Goldbo, isn't it? Do you want to save him, or kick his face in, or see him one last time, or what?" She followed him up, wrangling her hair into a knot behind her head.
"Did it ever cross your mind that maybe I just wanted to help you?"
"Help me what? They're either going to hold me hostage and torture me or kill me outright. I can suffer and die without your help. If they take me off the boat, just stay here, okay?"
"Not gonna happen," she said. "You really know how to drive one of these things?"
"I'll tell you in a minute. Why would the AAO buy boats anyway, considering our allergy to water?"
"We use watercraft in a number of missions, military and deep cover."
The cockpit was sealed against the weather, three panes of glass overlooking the front of the boat and a sky and lake nearly indistinguishable from each other in the early morning. Gray clouds walled off the sunlight, a drizzling mist coating the glass and distorting the murky view. A wind from the east screamed and whispered, surging and dying as it beat against the yacht. Hilo surveyed the controls while Cassandra grabbed a phone left on the console by Magdalene, bringing up a map of their destination. After a couple false starts, the motor purred to life, and he pushed forward on the throttle, taking it slow while he got a feel for the vessel. As stronger light eroded some of the gloom, he throttled up, the craft skimming through the water toward the coordinates given them by the dreads. Morning struggled to take hold. The gray, drizzling day felt more like the onset of an early winter than the gradual emergence into spring. The occasional snow flurry mingled with the light rain, and the chill of the wind drove the outside temperature down close to freezing. As they knifed through the water, the uneven surface of the lake undulated and pitched the boat. "This is it," Cassandra said an hour later. "Well, close enough." Hilo powered down the boat and let it drift. He'd hoped the weather would improve with the day, but instead the clouds outside had darkened, the wind stiffening to a steady roar. Cassandra rummaged around in the stateroom and found a pair of binoculars. She opened the door to the foredeck, but the howling squall changed her mind and she slammed it shut. "Keep the glass clean," she ordered, and he punched the wipers up. She scanned the horizon for a few minutes. "You're going to want to see this," she said after a few moments, handing him the binoculars. "Look where I'm pointing." Hilo peered through the lenses out into the unsettled horizon. A dark gray ship with two large cranes sat nearly camouflaged by the troubled sky above and behind it. To normal eyes, the ship may even have been invisible in the gloom, but an ash angel wouldn't miss it. An enshrouding Vexus cloud emanated from it as if it were a maritime shed, making it visible despite the distance and weather. Lightning cracked behind it. Its running lights were off, and it almost seemed abandoned and adrift. "That's not the east wind," Hilo stated. "The east wind was a roll-on, roll-off ship. That's a standard cargo hauler. I can make out its cranes." Had he been wrong about Tella's song? Was there something he'd missed? "Who cares about the cranes?" Cassandra said, voice awed. "Look at the aura. I've never seen anything that could cast a Vexus aura that big except an atrocity site." "Maybe it is one. It seems haunted." "I bet a nice warm stack of freshly printed forms in Deep Seven is starting to sound good right around now." Hilo turned the ship to face into the wind to minimize the uncomfortable side-to-side motion. They couldn't tear their eyes away from the cargo hauler. A thunderstorm hovered above it, like an obedient raven. While they waited, the hail and rain traded places, hammering the glass and obscuring the ship behind a dirty veil. Like a leaden ghost, it floated toward them, the sky darkening to twilight at its approach, the gloom only broken when lightning tore the sky. Thunder deep enough to feel in the gut rattled their teeth and shook the windows. They grabbed the rails to keep from tumbling about as the yacht bucked in the white-capped waves. The storm was shed work for sure. "Hilo," Cassandra yelled above the racket of the howling storm. "You should have tried harder to convince me not to come. You are a bit pig-headed, you know. I'm glad you're with me, but I think you'll regret it." The massive ship cut a line in the water, ponderously bearing down on them as implacably as the tortured weather. It loomed above them like an iron cliff, pushing an avalanche of water before it. Hilo powered up the engine and grabbed the controls. If the dread's plan was simply to off him by crushing the yacht and forcing him into the cold, violent sea, they had another thing coming. He pushed the throttle forward, and a searchlight from the ship ignited, beaming down into the cockpit. Hilo raised his hands against it and throttled down. The radio crackled. "Bring your ship to port." Hilo swallowed reflexively as the breakers from the slowing ship added to the jostling they had already suffered. He pushed the boat through it, heading to the port side of the monstrous ship. His stomach clenched as they passed into the Vexus surrounding the vessel, the subtle torching effect beckoning in the back of his mind. What were the dreads going to do to him?
Was Devin Quinn really so desperate to get his piece of Hilo just because he had spied the pendant? Or was he still angry about Primus? Cassandra sidled up next to him and grabbed his arm as he tried to steer closer to the cargo hauler without letting the waves drive the yacht into it. Hilo turned and glanced at her, and she attempted a brave smile. She fought the demons inside, too. The searchlight continued to guide them in. Once they got close, two dreads threw a life preserver tied to a rope overboard. It dangled between the ship and the cargo hauler.
"They can't be serious," Cassandra said.
"Just one rope, Cassandra. I've got to get up there. You need to take this ship back and let them know the East Wind isn't the target. Perhaps Divine Providence brought you here after all."
"I said I'm coming with you. That's it. They can haul us both out."
"I thought you might say that." He grabbed her and chucked her down the stairs, hoping he'd broken a few of her joints in the process. Wrestling open the cockpit door, he sprinted out onto the foredeck and dove into the lake before he could think about how dangerous it was. The bitterly cold water smacked him in the face, his heart jarring to life as he was submerged beneath the waves. The shock to his sensate body filled his limbs with cement, the aching cold paralyzing him. Down he sank, lungs burning with the unfamiliar need to breathe. Up. His mind screamed at his muscles to extend and contract. The rigors of boot camp hadn't been for nothing. Mustering his retreating will, he thrashed his legs and flailed his arms, fighting the water that pulled him down like an anchor. With a yell, he crested into the whistling air, waves slapping him around. He spit the cold water from his mouth and swam for the life preserver before the numbness overtook him. The sounds of gunfire erupted around him, and he stopped and ducked under the water. Were the dreads going to finish him right there? The cold forced him back up. He'd rather die by a shot to the head than get dragged down to a watery grave, sucking water the whole way. Glass shattered. They were peppering the yacht with a fusillade from their newly forged weapons. Cassandra. The numbness wormed its way into his body. "Move!" He didn't want to. A wave pushed him past the life preserver, and he feebly flopped an arm at it. He couldn't feel his hands. The cargo hauler loomed above him, the rain pelting down around him so he could hardly see. Another surge slammed his right shoulder into the hard metal of the ship. The hit was like a knife cut. The water drowned out his cry as he slipped under the agitated waves. He had to move. His clothing felt like heavy chains constricting his limbs. He had enough grit for one more shot. Then he was done. Clenching his teeth, he churned his arms and popped out of the ensnaring water, the acrid smoke of the burning yacht adding to his disorientation. He cast about frantically for the life preserver. 15 feet away. It might as well have been a mile. Someone grabbed him from behind.
"For a Marine," Cassandra said. "You suck at swimming."
Cassandra did the work of two, Hilo contributing what weak motion he could, the spray of the water and rain blurring his vision. The red of the ring was the only color in the world of gray, and they struggled toward it like nothing else existed. Cassandra gripped it first and then hooked his arm over it. The dreads hauled them up. As their chests rose above the water, immediate relief from the pain and the cold invigorated them.
"Thanks, Cassie," Hilo said. "Don't thank me. I made a mistake coming out here. No offense."
The heaving ship didn't do the dreads any favors, and the journey upward was accompanied by a lot of swearing and yelling. Once at the top, rough hands dragged them onto the rail and threw them down onto the sopping wet deck. The dreads were dressed in cheerful yellow rain slickers, made ironic by their hateful looks and the gunmetal weaponry slung over their shoulders. 7 in all surrounded them, but an 8th approached wearing a hooded rain jacket. Hilo recognized him as Gutra, the dread Goldbow had shot in the face during their escape from the law firm. Like Dahlia, a cloudy Vexus aura surrounded him. Maybe he had been a passenger on one of the other Dreamliners and collected the Vexus.
"You were to come alone," Gutra said.
"I did come alone," Hilo retorted. "She was supposed to return with the boat, but your goon started shooting it up before she could leave."
It was a good lie, and Gutra seemed satisfied with it.
No matter, Gutra said offhandedly. He brought up an all-weather walkie-talkie. We have him and another. Get underway.
The engine spooled, adding their mechanical roar to the maelstrom's fury. The dredge jammed weapons in their backs and marched them along the side of the deck, a rail between them and a drop to the churning lake water. Compared to the jostling of the smaller yacht, the undulations of the heavy freighter seemed like solid ground. The cargo ship stretched nearly 700 feet long. To their left, a white superstructure, 8 stories of crew quarters and control rooms, rose into the storm. Devouring rust-reddened chips and scratches marred the metal railing and walls, anywhere weather or age had worn away the protective gray paint. As they passed beyond the superstructure, the foredeck stretched away before them. 2 white cargo cranes loomed over 2 yawning hatch openings in the top of the deck, leading to abyssal cargo holds. The hatch covers were open, even in the storm. From the rearmost opening emanated the Vexus that surrounded the ship, belching out like polluted exhaust from the belly of a dirty engine. Hilo hoped they would turn back and take shelter in the superstructure, nature's wrath feeling more dangerous by the minute. Gutra had something else in mind.
Put them in the hole, he ordered.
The dreads prodded them on with the rifle barrels, herding them toward the rear hatch opening and the Vexus flowing from it. A cargo basket hung from the crane above it, but it didn't lower as they reached the edge. Hilo contracted his hands into fists as the torching effect of the Vexus cloud set in. Cassandra's pace slowed, eyes rolling as if under the influence of a powerful drug. Goldbow's betrayal was too fresh. Her wounded emotions boiled and cursed through her, her weakened mind unable to fight off the effect. Hilo grabbed her arm to steady her as they sidled up to the chasm, the driving rain pooling on the deck.
Do it, Gutra ordered.
Rather than a push, the dreads behind them kicked them in the knees. They crumpled and rolled over the edge, spinning out of control in a blind descent into the darkness below. Vision spinning, Hilo couldn't get his bearings. The fall felt long. He hit hard, the thud echoing in the immense chamber. His left knee cracked, and his femur broke like a thick tree branch snapping, shattered end pushing the skin of his thigh up like a tent. A dislocated left shoulder and cracked ulna added to his wrenched back. The dislocated shoulder he could fix, but he wouldn't be running anywhere. A shallow layer of rainwater covered the bottom of the hold, and metal shavings and grit bit into his skin. The few anemic yellow lights on the distant walls did little more than suggest the dimensions of the vast Vexus-filled cargo hold, the storm's incessant lightning providing the best view of his surroundings. Hilo rolled onto his back in the gloom, glaring up at the red silhouettes of the gloating dreads. He waited until they left before he checked on Cassandra. She had landed flat on her back about 6 feet away and stayed there, eyes shut. The black Vexus aura infesting the hold embraced them like a chill graveyard mist leaching into their minds. He focused on the memory of Rachel's divine light. As long as he remembered her aura, the darkness in his mind dispersed. Cassandra wasn't so strong. A stark flash from the branching lightning above revealed that his trainer had slipped into full incoherency, her face slack and eyes darting everywhere behind her lids as they tracked objects in a vision only she could see. Nothing on her was noticeably broken. Hilo sat up, leveraging his good arm to overcome his reluctant backbone. Once he could fully support himself on his butt, he flared his strength and yanked his left arm back into the socket with a nice pop. He scooted to his trainer's side, bad leg dragging behind him. Cassandra, Hilo yelled, slapping her face. Get out here. Nothing. Reaching inside for his divine power, he suffused her with his inspire bestowal. But the gloom sucked the power out of his encouraging words, her eyes barely fluttering at his attempts. Fear clenched at his heart. They were trapped and helpless. There had to be a way out. But even if they could escape the hold, where would they go? The dim light and swirling Vexus strained his sight. A smattering of metal scraps lay strewn around the hold. Old pieces of rebar, tin scraps, engine parts. This was a junk hauler. Besides the leftover metal, the hold was nearly empty.
Groaning like the starved gut of a giant beast, the enormous empty space vibrated with the force of the engines and the waves. The racket echoed off the thick walls around them, creating a sense of immense, unseen space. The walls were ribbed and painted a splotchy tomato soup red that appeared almost gray in the bad light. 15 feet ahead of them, dead center in the hold, a circular pool about 16 feet in diameter and 3 feet deep was welded to the floor. From it issued the poisonous vexus, like the residue of a dark spell rising from a cauldron. The rolling motions of the vessel sloshed some of the befouled water onto the ship's floor. 2 extinguished utility lights sat on tripods near a ramp that led to a platform at the far side of the pool. Hilo settled back into a sitting position in 3 inches of water, broken leg balking. Was that the pool where they tortured Ash Angels? Was that what awaited him and Cassandra? Maybe Goldbow had already suffered and died here after the Dreads had recorded the message. The pool blocked his view of the far end of the hold. There had to be a ladder out. He crawled away toward the side of the pool nearest him, then worked his way around it to the left, useless leg grinding against a chunk of metal that looked like a fan blade. As he rounded the pool's edge, he pulled back reflexively at the sight of 2 red auras at the far end of the hold. A stupid precaution. Of course the Dreads knew they were there. He poked his head back out. Behind the Dreads, a curving metal staircase painted yellow rose up between 2 of the ship's massive ribs and disappeared into the ceiling. The Dreads guarded it, 2 of their newly manufactured rifles in hand. 1 fired. The bullet banged next to Trace's hand, sending up a spray of metal and water.
"Cut it out, moron," the other Dread growled. "You punch a hole in that pool and Devon'll feed you to the fish."
So Devon was here. Hilo scooted back by Cassandra. She was a mess, corpse-like, save for the darting of her closed eyes. There was nothing to do but wait. He couldn't overpower the Dreads with a bad leg. Cassandra was too incoherent to do Glorious Presence. It was hopeless. He lay back down, hoping Cassandra could fight off the constant torching that had threatened their sanity without reprieve. He needed her abilities. He needed her experience. Uncounted hours passed before the whirring and banging of the ship's crane drew his gaze upward. The large railed platform he'd seen earlier descended through the hold's opening, swinging back and forth with the rocking of the boat. While difficult to discern the numbers, a host of red auras stood on the platform. And there was a shed. In the midst of the descending evil companions shone a single white aura. Goldbow, ropes restraining his wrists, peered down at them.